This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Kings. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of 1 Kings chapter 14 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Pandora's Box is a classic tale of Greek mythology. The first woman, Pandora, was given a box. And with it, she was given orders not to open it under any circumstances. But the old girl, she let her curiosity get the best of her. And when she popped the top, she unleashed this hideous suffering that has besieged humanity ever since. Pandora's Box. Well, King Solomon opened Pandora's Box for the nation Israel. During the reigns of David and Solomon, Israel reached unprecedented heights. The Hebrew kingdom dominated the world. But after Solomon's sin, the nation was never the same. King Solomon was fond, you see, of exotic women. He filled his harem with these foreign honeys who introduced him to false gods. Soon, idolatry filled the city of Jerusalem. And though the book of Ecclesiastes seems to suggest that Solomon repented toward the end of his life, nevertheless, the damage was done. Pandora's box had been opened. And for the rest of Hebrew history, the nation will struggle with this sin of idolatry. It took just one generation after Solomon for civil war to rock the kingdom. The Davidic dynasty reigned in Jerusalem over the southern tribe of Judah. Solomon's son Rehoboam sat on the throne. But the northern 10 tribes, or Israel, rallied around a man named Jeroboam, a man who committed a dastardly deed. Rather than encourage his people to worship in Jerusalem according to God's law, he worried that their trip south might reforge an alliance with the Judean king. And so he created an alternative religion. He didn't want to lose Israel's allegiance, so he created this compromised religion. He set up golden calves in Dan and in Bethel at the north and south of his kingdom, places within his own borders. And he encouraged his people to come and make their own sacrifices and have their own priesthood and celebrate their own feast days. It was a religion of convenience and a religion of compromise. It was a politically inspired religion, not a divinely inspired religion. And as far as God was concerned, it was just plain old idolatry. And as a result, in chapter 14, God's judgment falls on the house of Jeroboam. Verse 1. At that time, Abijah, the son of Jeroboam, became sick. And Jeroboam said to his brother, "Arise and disguise yourself, that they may not recognize you as the wife of Jeroboam, and go to Shiloh. Indeed, Ahijah the prophet is there, who told me that I would be king over this people." Now, back when Solomon was king, Ahijah had predicted that the kingdom would be ripped from Solomon's son, and that it would be turned over to Jeroboam, and that Jeroboam would ascend to the throne of the northern kingdom of Israel. Obviously, Ahijah's prophecy had come true. Jeroboam's mind is spinning, and he starts to think, well, maybe Ahijah can predict the outcome of my son's illness. And so the king sends his wife on an undercover mission to inquire of the prophet. It's odd. Though the king expects the prophet to see into the future, it doesn't dawn on him that if he can see into the future, he can probably see through a flimsy disguise. But nonetheless, he tells his wife to disguise herself and go and see Ahijah. He also says, "Take with you 10 loaves, butter up the prophet a little bit, some cakes and a jar of honey, and go to him. He will tell you what will become of the child." And Jeroboam's wife did so. She arose and went to Shiloh and came to the house of Ahijah. But Ahijah could not see, for his eyes were glazed by reason of his age. I'm thinking maybe he had cataracts. Just his eyes were glazed. By this time, the prophet is an old man. He's a seer who can no longer see. Now the Lord had said to Ahijah, "Here is the wife of Jeroboam coming to ask you something about her son, for he is sick. Thus and thus you shall say to her, for it will be when she comes in that she will pretend to be another woman." The Lord told him all this ahead of time. Ahijah didn't really need to see, did he? His decisions weren't based on sight after all. He relied on the voice of God, not his own vision. A good idea for you and me. The old prophet walked by faith, not by sight. And so it was when Ahijah heard the sound of her footsteps as she came through the door, he said, "Ahijah doing?" You get it? Ahijah said, "Ahijah doing, Mrs. Jeroboam? Come in, wife of Jeroboam. Why do you pretend to be another person? For I have been sent to you with bad news. Go tell Jeroboam, thus says the Lord God of Israel, because I exalted you from among the people and made you ruler over my people Israel and tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you. And yet you have not been as my servant David, who kept my commandments and who followed me with all his heart to do only what was right in my eyes, but have done more evil than all who were before you. For you have gone and made for yourself other gods and molded images to provoke me to anger and have cast me behind your back. Therefore, behold, I will bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam and will cut off from Jeroboam every male in Israel, bond and free. Jeroboam will be cut off from all his subjects. He will cease to rule. Now, it's interesting. This Hebrew word that's translated in verse 10. How many of you have the old King James Version? Okay, you see this. The Hebrew word translated in verse 10 to be male is actually a word that means one who urinates against the wall. That's what it means. So that the old King James translation of verse 10, and I'll put it up here on the board, says, I will bring evil upon the house of Jeroboam and will cut off from Jeroboam him that peeth against the wall. No joke. That's what it says, doesn't it, Charles? Yeah, that's what it says. And so here, males are identified as those creatures that peeth against the wall. After potty training three boys, this is also how my wife identifies the male species. Those that peeth against the wall. Well, they're going to be cut off from the house of Jeroboam. And I will take away the remnant of the house of Jeroboam as one takes away refuse until it is all gone. Every Thursday morning, they pick up my garbage. And so Wednesday night, I have to go and take out the garbage. And God is saying, I'm going to take out Jeroboam like I would a bag of stinking garbage. The dog shall eat whoever belongs to Jeroboam and dies in the city. And the birds of the air shall eat whoever dies in the field, for the Lord has spoken. The only memorial to be named after Jeroboam's son will be a brand of dog food. And in addition, a prophet gives Mrs. Jeroboam one more warning. Arise, therefore, go to your house, and when your feet enter the city, the child shall die. And if she was a true believer and a real mother, she probably would have never gone home. But she did. Ahijah's words to the woman continue in verse 13. And all Israel shall mourn for him and bury him, for he is the only one of Jeroboam who shall come to the grave, or in other words, die a peaceful death. Because in him there is found something good toward the Lord God of Israel in the house of Jeroboam. 1 Kings chapter 15, verse 29 informs us that the rest of Jeroboam's family dies violently in the aftermath of a bloody coup. But notice Jeroboam's son, Abijah, is spared violence by a peaceful death. Notice this. An innocent child was the only good thing that God could find in the house of Jeroboam. And so rather than allow this child to grow up under his father's evil influence and reap its judgment, God went ahead and took him. It's interesting. Death spared a corrupting influence and a torturous death on Abijah. And this sheds light to one of the Old Testament's most troublesome issues. When God ordered Israel to conquer Canaan, over and over he told Joshua to take no prisoners. Take no survivors. Wipe out, slaughter the women, the children, as well as the soldiers. We read that and we think, wow, God is being brutal, isn't he? God is being barbaric. But you see, we forget how hideously corrupt and defiled Canaanite culture had become. They were characterized by this dark occultism and animalistic lewdness. Obviously, this is a call, only a call that God could make in his infinite wisdom. But God spared those Canaanite children from moral corruption and eternal damnation by their mass extermination at the hands of Joshua and his soldiers. It was a severe mercy on God's part, just as it is right here. Well, verse 14. Moreover, the Lord will raise up for himself a king over Israel who shall cut off the house of Jeroboam. This is the day. What? Even now. For the Lord will strike Israel as a reed is shaken in the water. He will uproot Israel from this good land which he gave to their fathers and will scatter them beyond the river, beyond the Euphrates, back into the land of the Assyrians. Because they have made their wooden images, provoking the Lord to anger. And he will give Israel up because of the sins of Jeroboam, who sinned and who made Israel sin. The demise of the northern kingdom culminates in the year 722 BC, when the Assyrian Empire sacks the city of Samaria, Israel's capital, and scatters the tribes among the foreign nations. If you want to flash ahead about 200 years, 2 Kings 17 records Israel's final days, but understand it goes all the way back to its very first king, Jeroboam, and his sin. Verse 17 takes us back to the present. Then Jeroboam's wife arose and departed and came to Tirzah. When she came to the threshold of the house, the child died, just as the prophet had said. And they buried him, and all Israel mourned for him, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through his servant Ahijah the prophet. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam, how he made war and how he reigned, indeed they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. And if you turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 13, verse 20, it says this of Jeroboam, the Lord struck him and he died. Evidently he was judged by the hand of God. Verse 20. The period that Jeroboam reigned was 22 years. So he rested with his fathers, and then Nadab, his son, reigned in his place. Though Jeroboam reigned just 22 years, his evil influence lasted for 2.5 centuries. From 1 Kings 14 through 2 Kings 17, the author of the history flip-flops back and forth between the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. 19 kings will rule Israel, and none of them will please the Lord. That's zero, zip, zilch, nada, nothing, no one. Of 19 kings, not one pleases the Lord, and that was largely thanks to Jeroboam. They all followed in the sin of Jeroboam. Once there was a woman who had twins, and she gave both the boys up for adoption. One son was adopted by an Egyptian family who named him Amal. The other was adopted by a family from Spain who named him Juan. Years later, Juan sent his birth mother a picture, and she remarked to her husband how she wished that she could see a picture of Amal. And her husband reminded her, said, honey, the boys are twins. You know that. Sweetheart, if you've seen one, you've seen them all. And that's how it was with the kings of Israel. All 19 were goons, man. If you've seen one, you've seen them all. 20 kings reign over Judah in the south. Of those 20 kings, only 8 will gain the Lord's approval. But it's interesting, those 8 good kings kept Judah going 135 years after the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel. Their good influence. Well, 1 Kings 14, verse 21 shifts south. And Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he became king. He reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. Remember, the temple was the place where God put his name. The temple was the embodiment of God's name. It was the place that reflected God's nature. Now, his mother's name was Naamah, an Ammonitess. Catch this. His mom was a pagan. She was an unbeliever, an Ammonitess. And the mention of her here might explain the actions of Rehoboam. You see, he had watched his father. Guys, did you know that your children are watching their father? Rehoboam may have watched his father Solomon worship at these pagan altars and bow down to these idols, and now he follows in his footsteps. Now Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy with their sins, which they committed more than all that their fathers had done. For they also built for themselves high places, sacred pillars and wooden images on every high hill and under every green tree. Rather than worship the one true God, they worshiped idols. Rather than worship in the one sanctioned place, the temple, in God's prescribed manner, the law, they set up these illegal altars, these unsanctioned high places. They set them up all over town where they worshiped their idols. Perhaps you remember the Cold War incident involving Korean Airlines 007, Flight 007. The flight was headed from Anchorage to Seoul and was carrying 269 passengers as well as 29 crew members. After liftoff, it seems that the pilot put the plane on the autopilot. But a small mistake, a fraction off in the flight plan, caused a disaster. A few degrees error at liftoff caused the plane to end up 310 miles off course in the end. It ended up sailing over Soviet airspace. And you remember the story, the Soviets shot it out of the sky and it crashed into the sea. You see, God knew the same kinds of dangers applied to spiritual matters. You can be a few degrees off your doctrine in the beginning, continue on that projected course, and end up way off the mark at the end. This is why God's law was centralized. This is why worship in the Old Testament was highly centralized. There was a single temple. There was a single priesthood, a manner to worship God. And all this was to safeguard against man's tendency to stray. It's interesting, the same exists today. There's still one place to worship God, and that's Jesus Christ. He is not a way or a truth or a life. He is the way and the truth and the life. God has made it very simple for us so that we can't miss it. And there were also perverted persons in the land. Many of the idols that Judah adopted were fertility gods. And these perverted persons were male prostitutes that performed lewd acts in association with the worship of these gods. They did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. Isn't this interesting? Judah became as evil as the Canaanites had been. 500 years after possessing the land from the Canaanites and after driving out the pagans that had defiled the land, the Israelites are now embroiled in the very same sins God had used them to judge. Amazing. Verse 25. It happened in the fifth year of King Rehoboam that Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem. And he took away the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house. He took away everything, ripped him off royally. Solomon had stockpiled great wealth. Now, only after 5 years after he's vacated the throne, all of that treasure and all of that wealth is gone. 2 Chronicles describes Shishak's raid and Judah's response in more detail, and we're going to save it until we get there. Egyptian archaeology, though, sets the date of this invasion as 925 BC. He also took away all the gold shields which Solomon had made. You remember 1 Kings 10, verse 16, mentions 500 gold shields, 200 large, 300 small. The shields, of course, were more ornamental than they were practical. Gold is too heavy and it's too soft to really be used in combat. These shields, though, were show-off shields. They were meant to demonstrate Solomon's great wealth. Solomon, you remember, was the king of the bling. And here's the revealing detail. Neither Rehoboam nor any other Jewish king made any attempt to retrieve these shields. Shishak walks in, takes them off, and instead of going to get them, having the courage to go and get them, King Rehoboam is content to replace them with inferior substitutes. Then King Rehoboam made bronze shields in their place and committed them to the hands of the captains of the guard who guarded the doorway of the king's house. And whenever the king entered the house of the Lord, the guards carried them, then brought them back into the guard room. Here's Judah's decline in a nutshell. In 5 years, they went from gold to bronze. Now, there is some symbolism in this story that I believe applies to the church. Gold, you see, represents God's work. Man plays no part in the manufacture of gold. Whereas bronze is an alloy of zinc and copper. It's the result of man-made processes. Here is what has happened today in many quarters of the church. God's work, His timeless word, supernatural power, it's being replaced today with man-made processes. Gold is gone, and the church has become content with bronze. Churches today are trying to grow through gimmicks and self-constructed formulas and the latest marketing techniques rather than relying on the golden power of God. The church may succeed, but in the end, they're going to end up with an inferior, flimsy foundation. It's time for church leaders to get courageous and to storm the gates of the enemy and take back the golden shields, the Word of God, the power of prayer, the supernatural work of the Spirit. Take back those golden shields that have been stolen from us. Well, verse 29 tells us, "Now the rest of the acts of Rehoboam and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? And there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all their days. So Rehoboam rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. His mother's name was Naamah, an Ammonitess. Then Abiyam, his son, reigned in his place." 1 Kings 15 and 16 now begin the succession of kings that come after Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Rehoboam of Judah died in 913 BC, and his son Abiyam ruled in his place. In the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, Abiyam became king over Judah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Maacah, the granddaughter of Abishalom. Just 3 years he reigned. Solomon reigned 40. Rehoboam, 17. He reigns just three, just a blip on the screen. But he did some damage in those 3 years. He walked in all the sins of his father, which had been done before him. His heart was not loyal to the Lord, his God, as was the heart of his father David. Abiyam was David's great-grandson, but that's where the relation ended. He followed after his father and grandfather's idols rather than the God of David. 2 Chronicles 13 tells us of a victory that God gave Abiyam over Jeroboam. But here's how the king thanked God. We're told, "Abiyam grew mighty, married 14 wives, and begot 22 sons and 16 daughters." And remember, he only reigned 3 years. I mean, he's on Solomon's pace with the 700 wives and the 300 concubines. In other words, Abiyam also added foreign wives to his harem against the commandment of God.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is teaching his way through the book of 1 Kings, verse by verse. If you've ever experienced the inevitable reality check, that's not unlike what happens to King Solomon in this book. After years of faithfulness and blessings from God, he eventually decides he can take care of himself. He's blinded by wealth and power and even begins to live outside of his faith, perhaps thinking he no longer needed God to continue as king. Then, the reality check. If this sounds familiar and you would like to learn more about how to apply these teachings to your daily life, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's about all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in the book of 1 Kings. Pastor Sandy has more to share about King Solomon and the blessings he would eventually give up for his pride and possessions. Remember, when you pray, to thank God for the blessings he's given you. Thanks for listening to Sandy Adams Radio.